Hey, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lindsay.
And I get to introduce Carl. And let's see. In short, a lot of people know here, if I know you, you know that I know Carl. You know that I've known him for a long time since I got sober. And it's so weird because I was actually thinking, this is so random. I was actually thinking about Carl this morning. And this is so random. I was thinking about Carl is always, he's one of the most consistent people I know. But I had this thought that he used to do this he always works out. He's really big into working out or being physically fit. And I was thinking about Carl. I was like, God, he's always just does whatever he's led to do. And in short, if there's anybody who carried the message to me, it was Carl. If there's anyone who's been one of the greatest teachers in my life, the entirety of my experience is Carl. When the things that he teaches, it's not what he says. It's honestly his true humility and his true commitment to know God and to help others. It's very simple. And I'm very grateful and honored to have him in my life, and I wouldn't be here and have the life through this process if it wasn't for Spirit carrying it through him. So with that, I'll give you Carl.
How are you guys doing? My name's Carl and I'm an alcoholic.
And an addict.
Glad to be here. this is a great workshop. I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful workshop. I thought they did a great job describing some things really, really well. And it was really cool to hear about this workshop. Not to speak. I would have rather not spoke, personally. But but to hear about it was really cool because the two guys that were up here have been pretty much with me my whole sobriety. And they're two people that have been very influential in my life. And so anytime that happens, it's always kind of cool to come to something like this. So, and obviously, Tarek's been a big part of my life. We've known each other for a long time. But I've actually known Nari even longer. Nari, I met right after I sobered up. And it was the same way. He handed me a CD. And I listened to it. And it really changed. It changed a lot of things for me. It opened up my eyes to some kind of like what Tarek was saying. Some pretty big holes in my game, and some new perspectives, some new ideas, some new actions to take, and just a lot of new stuff. And a lot changed for me around that time. And it came at a really good time because I was in a lot of pain during that time in my life. Some things were not going how I wanted them to go, and some people were not acting how I wanted them to act. And so I was in a lot of pain, and so I was really willing to do some shit that possibly before I wouldn't. And one of them was meditation. Nari talks a lot about that. It's not that I had never heard of meditation. I came up with this idea, and I don't even know where, that meditation and prayer were the same thing. So if you're doing one, you're doing the other, you know. And so I just prayed because I was lazy. And praying's so much easier, you know. Even a good prayer, what is that, a couple minutes? You know? I was just really lazy, honestly. I look back on, and I just didn't really see the benefit. And, I come from kind of a metalhead background, and that's kind of hippie bullshit in my opinion. And I'm not really going to do that kind of stuff, and I'm never going to get into anything like that, most likely. But the truth was actually completely different. Tarek asked me to give a talk tonight, and obviously the tone of the workshop is the first step in powerlessness and what that looks like. I don't know if it's the... when I look at the steps, if it's the one that it seems to be the least understood, but it might be, you know. And the reason is because of something that they touched on, this thing called delusion. It's hard to look at things for what they are when you're delusional, you know. And if you want to know the kind of delusion we're dealing with, I'm just going to describe my experience, what I've seen and what I've done, and then obviously what I've seen and witnessed since I've been sober. And it literally is this bad. Me and Richie are going to argue about the color of that t-shirt, and I'm going to tell you that it's black, right? Even though that it's clearly not black, I believe without a shadow of a doubt that it's black, you know? And that's the kind of delusion that we're dealing with, you know? And that's why I believe the first step is a very misunderstood step, a very confusing step, right? Because we're dealing with delusion. We're dealing with a mind that is telling us something that's not true. You know what I mean? It has nothing to do with reality, right? And the reason I say that is because I look at my experience with the first step, and I've worked with tons of guys, and it's like it's clear as day, the powerlessness, right? But we just don't see it. Like we can't see it because we're delusional. And that was my experience to a T, you know. And so when I discovered the first step, and I was really fortunate to have some great teachers and some great people describe this kind of stuff, for me, a lot of my delusion started, it all started to come full circle for me when I finally got sobered and my brain was cleared. And here I was sober going through the steps. And just like Tarek said, all of a sudden, you know, like the physical craving, it explained things that otherwise weren't explainable for me. Because the truth was for me is I really didn't understand why I was doing what I was doing, right? But I had some ideas, right? And I'm going to tell you right now, none of them were that I had a physical craving or that I had a mind that was lying to me, right? That was looking at this shirt and saying that it's black, right? It was much more, I'm a piece of shit and I'm never going to amount to nothing. You know, and this is just the way that it is for me. I'm not good enough, you know. It's the guys that I run with. It's this, it's that, right? It was all these things, but none of them had anything to do with the truth, right? Because I know today more than ever in my life that the things I describe, that's not the truth, you know. Because let's investigate one of those, like the guys that I ran with. A common thing that happened to me is I would be living here and I would move over to here away from my guys, you know what I mean? And sometimes that was across town and sometimes that was across states. But inevitably what would happen? I would find my guys, right? And it weren't those guys, but it was my guys, right? And that would happen every time. But I really believed and I really thought that if I just moved away and I got away from those guys, that's what would happen. Or sometimes what would happen is I would move far away and then I would just drive back to my guys. But anyways, so the tone of the talk is obviously the first step and what that looks like for me. So I'm an alcoholic and I'm a cocaine addict, right? And I'm one of these weird guys that cocaine and methamphetamine had the exact same effect. I can't really explain that. But the reason I say that is because I knew a lot of guys that did cocaine and I knew a lot of guys that did methamphetamines and they either did one or the other, you know what I mean? And they were, each of them kind of frowned on each other. You know, the guys who did the dope said the cocaine was a waste of time. The guys that did cocaine said meth was dirty and nasty and I don't want nothing to do with it. You know, and for whatever reason, for me, the effect was the exact same. And I have a lot of powerlessness with both of them, you know, and that's just my experience. I did a lot of drugs because I really liked the effect produced by drugs, you know. I like the effect produced by opiates. But at the end of the day, I don't experience what heroin addicts talk about. It doesn't itch. It does not scratch my itch. It just doesn't. Like, I like it, and if it's there, I'll do it. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to spend a dime on it. But yeah, at the end of the day, I like the effect produced by marijuana and opiates and all these things, and it's great, and nodding out and all this stuff, you know, it's great, you know, and it feels good. But at the end of the day, when I look at my experience for alcohol and cocaine, and methamphetamines, the experience is night and day difference. It's literally like comparing apples and oranges to the experience of when I put it in my body and that initial rush or whatever it happens, right? That experience pales in comparison to the other things. I mean, literally any drug I ever did, not even remotely the same, right? And when I discovered that, like I said, I never wasted a dime, a bit of energy on any of that other stuff. And it was like, and I didn't know this at the time, but I was just completely honed in. You know what I mean? I had finally found what really, really worked for me, I guess you could say. And again, I'm talking completely in retrospect. It wasn't like I was like driving the dope man, like, oh, I found what works for me. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, I was totally asleep to all of this stuff, right? I just found myself going all the time. You know what I mean? And I really, really liked the effect produced. So powerlessness for me, like when I look at it today, it's, I don't want to say it's necessarily harder, but after you're sober for a while, it's amazing, like, the life that you get and how much you change. It's so when I give my talk, it's almost like I have to look at, like, someone else's life and what it was like then. Because I look back on some of the things that happened to me, and so it's like it happened to a different person. Like, I don't know how I possibly used to live like that, you know? Like, I mean, obviously, anyone who does uppers knows that you're going to be staying up. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the reality. Like, and that's the thing is, and they talked a lot about this, is like our intentions going in are kind of important. Like, what was your plan? Like, and I'm going to tell you right now, I never once went on a bender was like, I'm going to stay for the next 5 days. Like, that's what I'm doing. And I've never once had that intention. I never had that plan. And I can't tell you how often I didn't sleep. You know what I mean? And I'm telling you, I am someone who believes that sleep is just probably God's greatest gift behind women. You know what I mean? Like, right behind women. It's just the greatest thing ever. And so when I look back on my experience with the physical craving, obviously that's like a part of it. And it's like, I don't even know how I used to do it. I really don't. I have no idea. But I obviously did. And so I'm gonna tell some stories that will kind of help maybe describe what that actually looks like. So one of the things that they touched on, it's really, really important, I believe, and I think that it's a massive barrier for some people that are coming in to get sober, and that is this, that alcoholism and drug addiction is an internal condition, right? It has nothing to do with our outside circumstances, right? So like who you got high with, where you got high, how much you use, how you use, you know, how long, how old, how young, you know, like all those things have nothing to do with drug addiction, right? And the reason I say that is because I've met eons of people who are addicts, and when we start talking about stuff, there's some things we can relate and then there's some things we can't, because externally that's, see, most of our drama, what we realize it or not, has much more to do with the people you hang around with, the way you were brought up, the things that you saw as a kid. That shit's going to dictate that, not being an addict, right? So when I look at what is an addict, right, and what is powerlessness internally, right, I'll describe that, right? So I was working in Tucson, Arizona on a painting crew. I'm going to tell you right now, don't ever be a painter in Arizona. It's so hot. I mean, it's hot here, but it's humid here, and there it's not humid, but when it's 115, it's 115. I don't care if it's dry or hot. It was fucking horrible. And I'll never forget it. I love cocaine. And at the time, I was working. We had to get up super early, and I remember I got there, and no one spoke English except me. And my boss, who like would kind of come and go, he's always kind of a different job. So I worked nothing but Mexicans, right? And I never forget, this guy came up and he asked me if I don't even know what he said, but somehow I knew exactly what he was talking about. Like, you want some, like, Kohina? I'm like, yeah. And I'll never forget it. Like, he pulls out this bag, and obviously, you know, and he pulls out a key and a bag of cocaine, and literally I'm just like, what? And it was just like, next thing I know, I do a key bump of cocaine, which I had never done in my whole life, right? And it was just like, and then all of a sudden he walked out of the room and went back to work. And I literally remember, like, standing there, just like, it I sniffed it, and like, and there he's leaving. And all of a sudden, like, anyone who has experience, like, internally I was just like, that's it? Like, and for the next 8 hours, however long it was, I followed that motherfucker. Like, let me get another one. Let me get another one. Like, I just had never at that time experienced what it was like to take a key bump of cocaine. And, like, what a letdown. You know what I mean? But it was like, and that for me, right? So, like, all the craziness that happened when I got off work that night and whatever I got into has nothing, right? But it was just that mental torture, right? And that physical, just like, there's this feeling that you have to have more, right? Clearly, in reality, you don't have to have more. I would have been totally fine if I didn't. I wasn't going to die if I didn't get right. But that's how it showed up for me. Like, literally following this guy around like a little rat. Just like cheese. Like, give me. Like, I couldn't stop. And I just followed him. I would work, and then I would go right over to him. And then work. And this happened all day long. And I had no idea that was going on then. But obviously, when I got sober and I started looking at this kind of stuff, it was stories like this. It's like, oh, that's why my reaction was what it was, and his reaction was he would work hard. And this happened time. I worked for this guy time and time again this would happen. He would literally just work, and I would just follow him. Like, you know what I mean? And like, anytime the boss, I'd fucking just, as soon as the boss was gone, beeline for him, just like, can we get some? You know? And again, his experience looking back was night and day difference. It didn't even look remotely the same, you know? And I would have the same experience a lot with people where I would be using and they would be using and the experience would be totally different. And then I didn't really understand why. And I wouldn't even think about it because I'm just zoned in on that I need more. Right. And that's how it shows up. It shows up internally. Right. The lengths that we go and some of the insanity that we do vary so much. Right. And they're ultimately things that have to do with our story, but has nothing to do with alcoholism or drug addiction, you know. And so obviously over the years, it progresses in my experience very much. So that's a very common thing, obviously, with Alcoholics Anonymous is the way that I started using cocaine. And down the road, we're just totally different. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The first time I did cocaine, I was talking to someone about this the other day. The first time I did cocaine, I was like, this is it? Like, this is what these fucking people have been talking about? Like, it did nothing for me. Like, literally nothing. Like, I did it and was just like, you know, you'd hear all this shit about it and you hear all the stories and it's just like, that's it? But for some reason, something just switched for me. And I can't really explain it. But it finally started to produce an effect that was unlike anything I'd ever known. To this day, if I think about it long enough, I'm sure a lot of people have this experience. I mean, you literally can start getting, your hands are sweaty. And I mean, you can literally produce an effect. Like, that's the kind of effect that it's so powerful, you know. And I don't know if it's the reptilian brain or whatever it is, but it's amazing how I can produce something like that in myself, but yet I can think of many other situations that doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? I can think about, you know, opiates till, you know, I'm blue in the face, and it's not going to do anything for me. You know what I mean? But cocaine and methamphetamines, it literally, my heart will start racing. I mean, it'll literally produce a physical reaction, you know. And the reason why is because of the effect produced. It's that good. You know what I mean? I mean, and I look back on my experience, and for me, it got better and better. It wasn't like, I remember hearing someone describe addiction like, yeah, it's the first time you get high, and it's like, you're always chasing that high. It's like, nah. No, that's not what happens in my experience at all. But the magic that occurs for an alcoholic or an addict in those, in that first hit or that first bump or that first drink or that first line, that's the magic, right? That's the thing that all of us are chasing in my experience, right? And that's why I'm not chasing all these other things, because they don't produce that. They just don't, you know what I mean? Like I said, if it's there, I'll do it, sure, whatever, you know? But at the end of the day, you know, I never did anything for any of that stuff. And that's why. You know what I mean? So anyways, I drank a lot in, you know, Denver. I'm not from in Georgia, for any of you that don't know. And I drank a lot in Denver, Colorado. And I'll share this story with you. So I was living in Denver, and my parents don't live in Denver, but they came to Denver to visit, right? And so I really wanted to see them, and we had every intention of meeting up and all that stuff. And we had, and I'll never forget it, I had literally every intention of going and seeing them, and I went to a buddy's house, and I started drinking. And I stayed drunk and high for the next 5 days or so, you know. And just like Tarek said, I came to the horrible realization that I had missed them. You know what I mean? They were, you know, I really did. I wanted to see them. I was really poor and broke at the time, so a free meal was like really appealing to me. I had every intention of seeing them. You know what I mean? But once I start to drink, I lose control, and I can't tell you when I'm going to stop, right? And that experience, I remember coming out of that, and I, just like Tarek, there's a tremendous amount of remorse, and there was a tremendous amount of confusion, and there was a lot more ammunition that was added to the belief that I'm just a piece of shit and that I'm never going to amount to nothing, you know? And that's what I thought I was, because that's what I believe people do that are like that. They don't care about their family, and so they don't want to see them, and so they'd rather get drunk, and they'd rather get high and run around than see their family that they never get to see, you know. But the truth is not that at all. I mean, I, like I said, when I look back on that experience, I had every intention of going, no doubt about it. I wanted to go. I was looked forward to going, you know what I mean? And so to wake up, to come to, you know, to obviously all the, you know, this was before text messages, but before, you know, to the voicemails, and was definitely, you know, a tough situation to swallow, you know. But at the same time, you know, there was also a feeling of like, that's what I needed, you know, it was that, you know, like, I'm going to change now, you know. It was moments like that where I always thought I was going to change, you know. And it's funny because those experiences, I mean, as powerful as they are in the moment, they're just fleeting, you know what I mean? It's just like, in the shortest amount of time, I was back doing exactly what I've always done, and that's drinking and using, you know. But yet at the time, I remember thinking, like, you know, I'll never do that again. You know what I mean? I'll never, you know, hurt my family like that again. And I can promise you that was just the very beginning, you know what I mean, of hurting them, even though they didn't live anywhere near me, you know what I mean? So powerlessness, You know, I guess there, you know, like they were saying, there's two parts to this thing, this physical and this mental, and those are two very good physical, right? And most of us can kind of just, you know, go on and on about that kind of stuff. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some mental stuff and what that looks like for me, because physically, I don't know if it's necessarily easier to look at. At least I think for me it was, honestly. I think for me it was easier when I got sober to look at why did I get high for as long as I did? Like, why would I say I'm going to go to the dope man's house once and for some reason I went like five times? You know what I mean? Like, or when I was out of money, like, why would I do what I was doing? Like, why would I get rid of that stuff? Like, I really wanted that stuff. Like, why did I do that? The physical really answered those questions for me. And it was just clear as day. And honestly, I was sold on the physical quite a bit before I got sober this time, because I was bouncing in and out of AA in Denver, Colorado, and I was really fortunate to end up at a place, and I met this guy named Gino, and some of you have met him. He came out to a retreat, and he introduced me to the Big Book, and he introduced me to this idea of loss of control, right? When you start to drink, can you control the amount you're going to drink? And for whatever reason, at this particular time, never before, but at this time, it started to make sense to me. Right, why I was doing what I was doing, and it was clear that I was not the same as a lot of the people that I ran with, and it was also clear that I was identical to some of the people I ran with, right? And that's a tough one. It's, you know, it's tough to look at someone, you know, you're getting high with, looking back and be like, oh, you know, he definitely looked like an alcoholic. And just like Tarek said, some of them end up not being alcoholic at all. The reason I know that is because I've made amends to some of them, you know. I've also made amends to some of them that I made amends, and not too long later, they're dead as a doornail, right, from this deal, right? So, and both, all of them looked like it, right? And then some of them did not look like it. And, but anyways, so, but the mental part was not the same for me. The mental part was something I just couldn't understand. I would hear people talk about it in Denver, and I didn't understand this idea that, I mean, I guess it was just a lot of my program. It's like everyone has a choice. Of course you choose. You know what I mean? And a lot of it too was, again, the belief system that I had come up with and had been adding more and more ammunition, is that I'm a piece of shit. I'm never going to amount to nothing, and that's why I do what I do. That's why I go back. You know. I don't know, looking back on it, I'm not really sure why that was so hard, even though my experience, again, my experience was so clear, right? Because I was sober many times, short. And that's the experience of almost everyone I meet. It's amazing how many people get sober, you know what I mean? Everyone's getting fucking sober. Anyone you see at a meeting's getting sober, right, for the most part. But it's amazing how many people aren't staying sober. You know what I mean? And I was that guy. You know what I mean? I was that guy that was picking up the white chips and really wanted to be sober many, many times, right? And sometimes it was for the wrong reasons, right? And sometimes it was for no reason other than I just can't stand living like this anymore. But the mental part, you know, I don't know. I guess just like I was describing at the beginning, I really thought that that shirt was black. You know what I mean? And I was really convinced that this time it was going to be different. Right? And that was a big one that I suffered from. Especially towards the end, I very rarely didn't experience or go over or reflect on the consequences at all, right? That would experience, I used to experience that early on where I would just find myself drunk, right? I would want to change, the next thing you know, or like Tarek was saying, I would just smoke pot and just drink, right? And that was going to be my solution, you know? But it started to get bad, obviously, and so I would reflect a lot on the consequences, and I would be scared, very scared, going into some of these, you know what I mean, like going to the dope man's house, scared as shit, because a part of me knows what's about to happen. And then another part of me is saying, like, nah, I'll never let it get that bad again. You know, like, I'll never go down that road again. Like, I got myself out, however, you know, or they helped me out, or they, you know, the sober living helped me out. I'll never go back down that road again, you know. Not as bad as I used to be, you know what I mean? And I used to suffer from that a lot. And when I was living in Denver, and I was sober for a little bit. And in that very short amount of time, you know, it was amazing. I literally had nothing. And in a very short amount of time, I started going to automotive school, and I started working part-time, and I had an apartment, and I had a car, right? And I'll never forget it. All of a sudden, I started having these thoughts of, like, I'm so busy, I could never do what I used to do. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way. I mean, I used to stay up for days and days, you know, and just drink and drink. I could never do that now. I got a job, and I got to be at school at 7 in the morning. You know, like, there's no way I could live like that anymore, you know. And one night, all of a sudden, the thought crossed my mind, man, it'd be nice to have a drink, you know. And I had a drink, and I had another drink. And I had another drink, right? And the next thing I know, I was worse off than I ever was, right? And as a result of that, I lost everything in my life that I just explained to you that was so important. And I could possibly never, right? It was just like dominoes. The job went, this went, the car, blah, blah, blah. And here I am. How the fuck did this happen? Like, I promised myself that I would never do this again. And here I was again. I believe that with everything in me, looking back on it. Like, I literally believed everything, you know. And that's a common thing in my experience with the mental obsession, is it will paint this picture of, it's going to look like this. But for whatever reason, reality comes around and it doesn't look anything like that. It looks like this, right? And then you suffer the consequences of whatever that was, you know. And it sucks, you know what I mean? Going through that torture time and time again, right? And then coming out, just like having a firm resolution, like, I'm not going to do it anymore, you know. Like, I'm not going to do it anymore. I can literally remember having every intention of being sober, driving down the interstate, and I would see a billboard of, like, Jack Daniels. And it was just like, boom. It's over. You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do? Like, if you're going to hide from billboards, like, where are you going to go? You know what I mean? Like that's what we're up against. I had no idea that I was going to be driving down I-25 and I was going to see a sign for a Jack Daniels or some whiskey company, and all of a sudden, within minutes, I'm going to the liquor store, right? Like, how could you possibly defend yourself from that scenario? You know what I mean? You can't. And that's the scariest part about it, is you don't know when it's going to come. Like, I didn't know that it was going to come that day, you know? But just like the book says, there will come a time where you will have no effective mental defense against that, right? And that's exactly what happened, you know. Another experience that I had, I was hanging out in a clubhouse, an AA clubhouse, and I had just met with my sponsor. We were actually doing a little bit of work, you know. I don't remember what we were doing, but I was doing some. So I was doing probably more than I've ever done. And I was going to plenty of meetings. I was fucking cranking them out. And I'll never forget, I had a really shitty day, and we went to the clubhouse, and he could tell, and so I, you know, whined to him for a while, and, but at the end of the talk, I'll never forget it, like, I literally felt really great. Like, I remember just being like, man, it's gonna be okay. Like, you know, my life sucks right now, but like, that's okay. Like, it's been worse, you know, and everything's gonna be fine. And I'll never forget it. We were walking out of the clubhouse. There was no one left in the parking lot except me and him. We were walking, and he literally hugged me or shook my hand. I don't know. And we were going to our cars, and all of a sudden my phone rang, and it was just some random number. And I answered it, and it was my buddy Tim that I've run with my whole life. And he's like, "Get over here, motherfucker." And I was just like, "Okay." It was just like that quick. I had every intention of staying sober. I wanted to be sober. You know what I mean? Like, that's how fast it happens. That's what powerlessness looks like. You know what I mean? And where it took me, who cares? You know what I mean? The things that I did and the drama that unfolded between me and that guy for the all however many years has nothing to do with anything. You know what I mean? The problem is in that moment, I had no effective mental defense against that, right? Want to know how I know that it's different now? That same motherfucker called me on accident, right? And was like, "What's up, man?" And didn't bother me at all. I wasn't about to go over to his house. I was, right? It was just complete night and day experience, right? Why? I don't know. Because my mind changed. Right? Because I literally, my thought life has changed completely, you know, and it no longer thinks that it's going to be different. It no longer thinks about doing it. One of the ones that I suffered a lot from towards the very end was this belief that I don't really give a shit about anything, you know. So I'd be driving to the dope man's house and a part of me would be like, "This is terrible. This is a terrible idea." And then a part of me would be like, "I don't give a fuck about nothing," you know. And I would believe that, even though that's the furthest from the truth. Right? Trust me, I care very much about my life. And trust me, at the end of that run, you know, and I was all beat up. And, you know, it was one of those things of like, I can't believe it happened again, you know. So this is what powerlessness looks like, you know. I'll talk a little bit about, you know, how to get sober. Like, what do you got to do? What have I done? So I sobered up briefly in Denver, Colorado, and then ended up out here. I had no intention of staying sober because I had tried sobriety. Sobriety was not, what should I say, it was not the most pleasant experience for me, you know, it really wasn't. I absolutely hated the way that I felt when I was sober. I really did. I could not stand it, you know, and I didn't know that that was the unmanageability. I didn't know that I suffered from this internal condition. I just knew that I absolutely hated myself. And I thought everybody hated me, and I never thought that was going to change, and I never thought I could do anything right in this world, and a lot of times I really thought about taking myself out of this world, you know, and so that was a state for me sober, you know, and I absolutely hated it, you know, I hated what I came to when I got sober. I would desperately want to get sober at times because it was so bad. And then in a very short amount of time, I would start to realize that, wait a sec, maybe this sobriety isn't that great after all, because I'm literally going crazy, you know what I mean? And I guarantee you, if I was to, at that time, and any time I got sober, if I was to see a professional and explain to them what was going on with me, I promise you, I could have got anything I wanted, you know what I mean, that would help with those things, you know, no doubt about it. Instead, I just suffered and got high. So anyways, I was out here and I was in this outpatient, and I was coming to the realization that I always did, that sobriety was starting to really sink in. Because what would happen for me when I would get sober, initially I would just feel terrible, you know, and I would go through the detox and I would go through all that. And so the desperation to get through that sometimes was huge. You know what I mean? If I can just get through this, you know what I mean? Just get through this, I'm going to be okay, you know. Even though my experience never, I would get through it and then I'd be okay and then I'd go right back, you know. But anyways, I was sober this time and I was, it started to unfold for me, right? I started to become extremely irritable, suicidal. I mean, I just started to come apart like I always did, right? So here I am kind of surprised that this is happening, even though this is what's happened every time I got sober, you know what I mean? And I'm whining about it and I'm complaining, you know what I mean? And it just got worse and worse for me. And ultimately what happened is I was sitting in this, you know, this halfway house, kind of sober living apartment that I was living in, and no one was in there. And it literally just, I just remember saying a prayer, just like, man, I cannot live like this anymore. I can't. Just please help me, you know. And I don't know what happened around that time, but something did. It started to shift around that time. It wasn't that night, anything like that. But it was around that time. The pain finally got bad enough that for whatever reason, I was finally willing to do some things that I didn't believe in, you know, because that was a big thing for me. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. I'm not doing that shit, you know. That's ridiculous. That's not going to do anything. I'm not doing that. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it was. And it started a change of, okay, I'll do that, you know, I'll do that. And I had no idea what was going on, but exactly what Tarek described, I had a surrender, right? And I became willing to do anything, you know. I just took orders, you know what I mean? Like, people would say, do this, and I would do this. If my sponsor said, do this, I just did it, you know. It was around that time I was, you know, I heard a guy describe the unmanageability, and I had never heard anyone talk about it. At this point, I thought, you know, this deal was just physical, mental, and I'm wondering, why am I so crazy? You know what I mean? Like, why do I feel like this? Is this what sobriety is all about? You know? And essentially what he said, for alcoholics and addicts, there will come a time that it will get so painful you can't stand it, and you will drink. And I'll never forget when he said that. It was like a ton of bricks hit me right in the face, because that was my experience to a T, right? I would get sober. I would actually want to be sober. I would not want to keep doing what I was doing. I was desperate not to do that stuff. And little by little, it would get so painful I couldn't stand it, you know? And so I would drink, because in my experience, drinking and using cocaine is a tremendous relief, you know. And I knew from that moment on to right now that I was an alcoholic and an addict. I knew it at that moment. Like, it finally, it's like, I didn't know it, but there was something, the piece was missing. It's kind of like if you work the steps, but you don't work the 12th step. It's not complete, right? It's going to fizzle out, right? It's going to be all for nothing. You know what I mean? It was like that. And at that moment, I knew that that was me. I knew it, right? My experience, finally, I could see my experience clear as day. You know what I mean? I could finally see that that shirt was green. You know what I mean? That's what happened, you know, in a flash of a moment. I just was sitting there and I just knew it, you know? Does that mean that I instantly felt better? No, not at all. But because of that experience, my first step experience drove me into the second step and the third step and the fourth step and the fifth step. You see what I'm saying? And that was the main thing that happened for me. I found a guy that took me through the 12 steps. And I had a revolutionary experience. I really did. You know, I had some holes in my game, no doubt about it. But I had begun to live life in just a completely different way, right? The way I was interacting with people was much different. People could see it. The way I was interacting at work was much different. You know what I mean? Like, that change, that was probably one of the most dramatic things that changed for me, was my ability to actually show up to work, and then go home, right? I was the worst employee ever, like just ever. And I got fired so much and I was just the worst. You know what I mean? Drunk or so. I probably got fired for more jobs sober than I ever got drunk. I would get sober and get a job and just get fired. Like, dude, you're out of here. Dude. I'm like, I'm sober, you know, like just the worst, you know? And just my whole interaction there started to change dramatically. And it really was. It was the 12 steps. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the experience that unfolded for me when I worked all the steps was amazing. And that's why I'm such an advocate for all of the 12 steps. All of them, right? I can't tell you how many people I see work the first 11 steps and just never work with anyone, right? And it literally, in my experience, right, they'll benefit externally, but internally, they will crumble, right? They may get the world, right? They may get all this nice stuff. They may get literally all the things that they dreamed of. But internally, they'll never experience what I'm talking about, right? We had a guy come out here and speak. He said it so great. He said, if you ever want to die spiritually, don't help anybody. And that's true. You will starve. You know what I mean? And it's so true. And I've seen that time and time again. Same thing. I've seen people work some of the steps but not make amends, right? I've seen people work steps but not do meditation, right? It literally is about working all of the 12 steps. And I don't know why that is. Like, you would think, like, shit, you know, 10 out of 12, which you think would be sufficient. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, that's like a great percentage. But it just doesn't. It may short term, right? A lot of things work short term, right? It's amazing people, they come in here and what they're doing is working, so they think it's going to work forever. It's amazing. That's delusional. It's not. I promise you. It's going to change. It's going to evolve. What you did at 1 year sober is not going to work anymore at 4 years sober. What you did at 4 years sober is not going to work anymore at 8 years sober, right? It has to change and evolve, right? It stays the same baseline, the 12 steps, but those steps will change, I promise you. You will read that big book and it will look differently than it used to. I don't know why that is. I don't know how that is. I understand logically. It is the same boring writing. I understand. It was in the 40s. Like, was it 40s? Yeah. And like, I get that logically, but I'm telling you, the way that you perceive things is going to change so dramatically, you know, if you work all the steps, right? They are the game changer, right? In my experience, everything is built on that, right? Why do I believe that? Well, when I was living in Denver, Colorado, I did very little, if any, with the steps, but I went to tons of meetings, right? Which is part of this deal, right? Meetings, fellowship is a part of it. And nothing ever changed for me, right? That alone was not sufficient, right? Does that mean that the meetings and fellowship are not important? Not at all. I mean, why do you think I still go to meetings and I'm still a part of the fellowship? Because it's important. But, and obviously I never helped anybody, ever, with anything. And the reason why is because I was so consumed with myself that there's no room for you, right? There's no room for you guys when I'm wrapped up in me and what do I got to do and my job and my relationship and this and my dog and my blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? There's no room for you guys, right? But if you work all these steps, what will happen is it will create a tremendous amount of room for people, right? A tremendous amount of room. So this idea that, oh, I'm too busy to work with people or I don't have the time, it's nonsense, right? It's just bullshit. You know what I mean? It just is. It's okay. You know, let's just call it for what it is. You know what I mean? If you work these steps, the time will just be created. That's all I know, right? If you're committed, like Tarek said, avenues just open up, right? A friend of ours, me and Tarek have a really great friend. He's a super nice guy, but he's the most unpredictable guy you will ever meet in your whole life. No matter what, I promise you, no matter what kind of plans you make with this guy, he will, I promise, right before the meeting, call you and say, "Hey man, I'm not coming." No matter what. It's just what happens. He's the most uncommitted guy to honesty, and right? He's the greatest guy, but you just, you know what's going to happen, right? I'm telling you. Same thing with anything else, right? When you become committed to something, it's amazing. Like, here's an example. So, this is just recently. I took a new job and a year ago, and I, for the first time in my life, I have a boss that actually cares when we get there. Right? He wants us there on time. I'm a technician, right? I've always been in the car business. We show up whenever we want. You know, that's just how it is. And it doesn't mean we have to be here, but no one cares. It's just like you just kind of show up whenever you want. And all of a sudden, he wants us there. I could give a fuck about that, honestly. Right? So I'm late all the time. like 2-3 minutes regularly, you know, at least every other week. You know what I mean? Because I'm not committed. You know what I mean? It's not important to me. I don't care, right? Because I work on cars. That's my job. Trust me, I'm going to take care of things when I get there. You know what I mean? So he got on me about it, right? And we had a talk. And when I got done, I finally woke up. I was like, I'm an asshole. You know what I mean? I was like, you know, he's my boss, and, you know, he wants me here. He pays me to be here, so I'm going to be here, right? It's amazing. Since I've finally got committed to that, how I'm on time. I just leave early. You know what I mean? Like, I do whatever I have to do to keep my word with this guy, right? Because it's important to him, and honestly, it's not important to me. But he's important to me, and I want to, you know, I like working for him. I enjoy working for him, you know? So anyways, that's a good example, and I can go on and on about that, but it's true. When you become committed about meditation, it's amazing how there's just time to meditate. When you become committed about making amends, it's amazing how all of a sudden you're making amends, you know? And it's the truth with all this stuff. When you become committed to working with people and really wanting to help people, it's amazing how many people will come into your life, you know? Avenues just open up, you know, it just does. And I have no idea. It's just my experience to a T, you know. I didn't really know anyone who meditated, but as soon as I started meditating and as soon as I started became committed to it, it's amazing how many people came into my life that meditated. When before I like knew nobody, you know. It's like, where the fuck these people come from? You know what I mean? But that's just how it works. And as a result of that, you create, just like the book says, you create a fellowship about you. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, you find people in your life that are doing exactly what you're doing. Just like when I used to run with my buddy Tim and all our other boys, like, we ran together because we were tight. We were on the same page. We believed what we believed, and we liked the same things. The reason me and Tarek hang is because we believe what we believe. And we like doing it, you know? And so we jive well. I promise you, externally, you're going to see an enormous amount of differences about the two of us. From back in the day to now, right? But you talk to him about the 12 steps, and you talk to me about the 12 steps, and you're probably going to get some pretty similar stuff. That's why when I come up against stuff, I call guys like Terry. And that's why when they come against stuff, they call me, right? We're on the same page. We have the same vision. We're headed in the same direction, right? And it makes life easy, man. It amplifies the steps. It really does, right? I believe these steps will work if you just have a sponsor, right, and work them. I believe you'll have a powerful experience. But if you get a sponsor and all of a sudden you got a bunch of people in your life doing the same thing, I promise you it will amplify that, right? It just will. It's kind of like training. When you work out, it's really, really hard to duplicate an intense training by yourself. It just is. You can do it from time to time, no doubt about it. But there's very few people, very few, that can duplicate and replicate an intense training, right? That's why people train together, right? That's why people have coaches and training partners, right? Because that intensity gets lifted, right? You push each other. It's the same thing in here, right? God, trust me, Tarek has made more amends than anyone I've ever met. Trust me, that inspires me and pushes me to make my amends. I promise you. When anytime I think about amends, I think about Tarek. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. There's other people that I think about with other things. You know what I mean? Helps me, it helps them, right? We help each other. And that's, at the end of the day, I'll close with this. That's what we're doing here. We're here to help people, right? A lot of people need help, right? There's all kinds of people in the world that need help, you know? But unfortunately, you can't help everybody. So you got to pick your battles, right? I help addicts and alcoholics. I don't know why. I wish I could help, you know, vets and PTSD and mental illness and all these other things, but I can't. There's only so many hours in the day that you can help, right? And I don't know why. I'm just here, and I believe to help alcoholics and addicts, right? Does that mean that I won't have a chance to help other people too? Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? But I know for sure that a big part of why I'm here is to help people. And I believe a big part of why you're here is to help people, right? So with that, that's all I got. Thanks.